And now, Stein Online presents Mark Stein's Song of the Week.
Happy holiday to everyone from Mary Ellen Barrett, Irving Berlin's daughter.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Some songs are hits, number one for a couple of weeks. Some songs are standards. They endure decade after decade. And a few very rare songs reach way beyond either category to embed themselves so deeply in the collective consciousness they become part of a kind of societal soundtrack. They start off like any other number, a songwriter sitting down to put words and notes on paper for a show or a movie, a singer or an event. But they float free of the writer. They outlast the singer. They transcend the movie. They change the event. Our Christmas Song of the Week this year certainly belongs to that select group. But once upon a time, White Christmas was just an unknown song like any other. The man who wrote it was Irving Berlin, and on this special audio edition of our Song of the Week, we'll spend some time with Irving Berlin's daughter and hear how White Christmas sounds on Irving Berlin's piano, the way it might have sounded seven decades ago, before Bing Crosby made his best-selling record, before he introduced it to the world in the 1942 film Holiday Inn.
Not so very long ago, Mr. Irving Berlin had the pleasant inspiration to weave a story and song around our national holidays. You may recall it as Holiday Inn.
Irving Berlin loved America, and he sang its seasons. Easter.
In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it, you'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade.
And 4th of July.
God bless America, land that I love.
And of course.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used.
He seems to have had the idea for White Christmas a couple of years before the film Holiday Inn, and he then spent the intervening period plotting what to do with it. "You don't have to worry about this one, Irving," Bing told him. They both thought the movie and the record would do okay. The movie did okay. The record became the world's biggest selling single, and still is to this day. Had America entered the war in Europe in 1939, White Christmas might have had a very different fate, a hit record from a so-so movie. Instead, 1942 was the American serviceman's first Christmas away, under tropical Pacific skies that only made home seem even more distant.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write.
12 years later, in 1954, back in Hollywood, making another movie named for the song, Irving Berlin acknowledged the men who made it special. If you've ever seen the film White Christmas, you'll know that the best staging in the picture comes right at the beginning. Bing singing in the rubble, accompanied only by Danny Kaye's music box, as the boys rest their chins on their rifle butts and gaze into the distance, thinking of familiar places and friendly faces.
I'm dreaming
of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Irving Berlin was a professional songwriter, the consummate Tin Pan Alley man. But his story is here in the music too. Do you know this song?
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Nothing but blue skies from now on.
He wrote Blue Skies for the birth of his first child, Mary Ellen, whom we'll meet in just a moment. When his son Irving Jr. was born on December the 1st, 1928, there was another song. Sweet as can be, climbing on my knee, wait till you see, my little fella. And we'll hear a little more about that song too, and that Christmas of 1928. Mary Ellen Berlin is now Mary Ellen Barrett. When I interviewed her a while back, we were at Mary Ellen's home in New York, and in fact sitting at her father's piano. Irving Berlin was a terrible pianist, and after his first big global success in 1911 with Alexander's Ragtime Band, he started having pianos custom-built for his needs. He could only play on the black keys, because they stick up, so he played in F-sharp, which is black keys a-go-go. And so he had a mechanism attached to one side of the keyboard that made it sound as if he were playing in C or G or A or whatever he needed. Initially, it was a kind of steering wheel, and if you turned it right or left, it shifted the keyboard to position the hammers over higher or lower notes than they would strike if you were playing in F-sharp. Later, the steering wheel was replaced by a kind of stick shift. At any rate, whether with the key-changing wheel or the key-changing lever, he called these special pianos his Buicks. So here's Irving Berlin's daughter, Mary Ellen Barrett, and yours truly, sitting around the old Buick, as we recall the creation of his great song, White Christmas.
Right, here we are on Christmas by one of Mr. Berlin's famous Buicks. This is one of his pianos.
This is one of the pianos with the shifting keyboard, so he could play in his key, which, as we all know, is the black note key, yeah. F-sharp, and you could hear it in C or D or E or G or whatever other key was right for the singer. But he could continue to play in his key.
Now there's one of these in the Smithsonian, I know. How many did he get through in
I think there are about seven that I know of. Each of my sisters has one. I have one. One of my daughters has one. There's one in the Smithsonian. I think there's one in repair. And I think a couple died along the way. Because the first one must have been way back in the 1910s,
So are we? What are we? I mean, this isn't the Cohen owes me $97 period.
No,
this is the one.
No, this would be Annie, Get Your Gun. This is the post-war one.
Right. Well,
it doesn't have all the beautiful old carving. It's the one that was at Beekman Place. So this would have been the piano of Annie, Get Your Gun, Miss Liberty, Call Me Madam, the movies, Easter Parade, and White Christmas, Mr. President, and then those wonderful unpublished songs that were going to be in the movie Say It With Music.
Well, that's a good enough pedigree for me. Any piano that the score for Annie Get Your Gun was written on suits me fine.
And now, little lady, if you'll kindly step up to the parapet, I'll give you a lesson in marksmanship.
You couldn't give me a lesson in long-distance spitting. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
As I said, we don't know too much about Irving Berlin, the man. He wrote the soundtrack to the American Christmas. What were Christmases like in the Berlin household?
Well, I should say that Christmas in the Berlin family was preceded by Hanukkah because my father was a very good Jew in the ethnic sense. He wasn't particularly religious. My mother, the Christian, was the religious one in the family. And so we did not belong to any church officially, but my mother and father introduced us to both sides of our heritage, the Jewish and the Christian, which meant two sets of holidays. So the Berlin Christmas was preceded by the Berlin Hanukkah. The Berlin Christmas was lavish beyond measure. It was most entertaining. It began for the children with the biggest stockings that have ever been seen. And the purpose of these stockings, my mother would confess later, was to keep the children quiet so that even on Christmas morning, our night owl father could get his sleep. So, and then it was a huge Christmas, but my father always had this rather quizzical attitude. My mother knocked herself out. They both did, to give their children a great time, and the holidays were unbelievable. But he always had this little look in his eye, as if to say, you know, don't take it in stride. Don't take it too seriously. Just be grateful for what you have and understand it's not that way for everybody. I mean, he had this sense of humor about things.
As far as his childhood was concerned, obviously he as you say, he came from an Orthodox Jewish family, but he'd experienced a Catholic Christmas as a little boy.
Oh yeah, this was a story he would always end up telling at some point on our Christmas Day, about how when he was a little boy, he would sneak out of his Orthodox Jewish house to the Irish Catholic family across the street or down the block, because he liked the Christmas tree. He said it was a little tiny Christmas tree, but he didn't know that it wasn't the most splendid thing in the world. And you know, he believed in the great American Christmas. There's a lot of argument about that, if there is the same secular Christmas, and everyone, Jews, people of all faiths, participate in the joy and feasting of Christmas and quite detach it from the very, very serious Christian elements.
Well, I always feel with your father's most famous Christmas song that it's as much about America as it is about Christmas. Obviously, he was born in Siberia. They have white Christmases in Siberia, but you couldn't write that song about Siberia, could you?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a very funny line in Philip Roth's Operation Shylock, in which he compliments Irving Berlin, the Jew, who has managed to reduce the two greatest Christian holidays to a song about a bonnet and a song about snow.
Perhaps in your Easter bonnet with all the frills upon it, perhaps there is more to Easter than that. But it is a song that is for everyone.
Yeah,
that's
a joke. But it is a song that was meant for everybody. It was meant to express the longings of someone for an old-fashioned Christmas. Yeah. An old-fashioned winter.
Well, we'll come to White Christmas in a moment. There is an aspect of your Christmases growing up that you didn't fully understand at the time, that on Christmas Eve your parents would disappear for one part of the day, and at the time you never fully understood why.
Yes. Well, had to do with something that happened when I was too young to remember, and I was not told about till quite a bit later. And however, what's behind this is that on Christmas Day, 1928, my newborn baby brother, I believe he was about 3 weeks old, died. Nobody ever knew quite, I guess it was what they call now crib death. And this was a great, great tragedy in my parents' life. And so it was something they found unbearable to talk about. And I found out about this on my own when I was about 10 years old. And finally, later, my mother would talk a little bit about it. But it was a great tragedy for them. And so when I was little, every Christmas Eve, they would go out on this mysterious errand. And from the look on their faces, I didn't think it was something to do with the Christmas surprise, so that's what my mother said. But of course, what they were doing was going to the baby's grave to put flowers on the grave. So there was this shadow for my parents on Christmas, but they determined that this shadow would not spoil the day for their three daughters, and so they made it this glorious event. But years and years later, when we were all grown up and had our own families and our own Christmases, and my parents did not celebrate it very much, then my mother said to me, "You know, your father and I did not like Christmas. It was a very hard day for us, but we wanted it to be happy for you children."
It's an amazing story, and of course, Irving Berlin, we think of as a man who wrote happy songs of simple certainties, but when you look at his life, his first wife contracting a fatal illness on the very honeymoon in
right.
Cuba, a son who dies on the very first Christmas day. I mean, these are terrible tragedies.
But actually, you know, he didn't only write happy songs. I mean, if you start with When I Lost You, which was the song he wrote in the wake of his first wife's very tragic death.
I lost the sunshine and roses. I lost the heavens of blue. I lost the beautiful rainbow. I lost the morning dew. I lost the angel who gave me the summer, the whole through. I lost the gladness that turned into sadness when I lost you.
And throughout, there are extremely melancholy songs, if not in the words, in that very haunting use of minor keys and chromaticism. I mean, you think of a song like Russian Lullaby,
yeah,
which is a lullaby, but it is a song about a woman stuck in Russia of that time with her baby, longing for a land that's free. And that the haunting, sweeping melody. There were a lot of torch. He wrote a lot of torch songs.
Well, there's quite a lot of chromatic brooding in White Christmas.
Yeah, that's what's interesting about the song, because it is a Christmas song. It's a holiday song, but there is that core Irving Berlin in the melody and in the harmonies.
You were there an awful lot of the time when your father was writing his big songs, and you knew the circumstances in which they were written. But there doesn't seem to be any specific period when the writing of the song White Christmas was nailed down.
No, because nobody ever knew when this was written. And what I found was that in August of 1940, when my father was negotiating with Paramount to make Holiday Inn, he wrote to his lawyer that there was already one song written for the picture, which originally was going to be a review, called White Christmas, a song he considered so important it was going to be part of the Paramount contract. Now, that's the first surfacing of it. Later, he would say that the song had been written a couple of years before the movie, or several years before the movie came out. What I don't know is whether it was written in New York, let's say, in 1939, in our East End Avenue apartment, or whether, in fact, it was written in Beverly Hills, because, of course, the original White Christmas began with a verse of a poor fellow stuck in Beverly Hills with the sun shining, and he wants to be east and north with the snow and the green trees.
Well, we'll come to that that verse in a minute. It is a fascinating insight into a man who, as I say, was a recluse for most of the last 20 years. Since
yes,
his
he
final
was, but you
of
see what
White
happened, Mark, was that those years then cast this retroactive shadow on what went before. So people had this impression of Irving Berlin as having been for years a door recluse, but he wasn't. Yeah. I mean, I had a wonderful time growing up as Irving Berlin's daughter. He was a most enchanting person.
But you say that the moment that you first became aware that of what it was like to be the daughter of a celebrity actually came about when you were a teenager, White Christmas was a hit.
Yes. And you see, I was enormously proud of my father. How could you help but being that? And in 1 year, or in half a year, there was This Is the Army, which had opened on Broadway. It was my first opening night. It was the first time I had been at such an occasion. And there was my father up on stage. And this standing ovation, which was unbelievable for this little man standing up there about to sing "Oh, How I Hate to Get Up in the Morning," and that was my father.
I've been a soldier quite a while, and I would like to state the life is simply wonderful, the army food is great. I sleep with 97 others in a wooden hut. I love them all, they all love me, it's very lovely, but oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the hardest blow of all is to hear the bugler call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning.
So it was extremely emotional and extremely revealing of what he meant to Americans. Then, just a few months later, there was the number one song in America, Irving Berlin's White Christmas, which was the song I danced to at all my Christmas parties. And it was at that point that I always knew about my father and who he was, but that's when it really sank in.
Those were the war years when all those boys out in the Pacific who first made that song a really huge hit, and they were thinking about America far away, sitting on those South Sea islands heat and longing for home.
Yes, but you know where it first became noticed actually was in Great Britain. Maybe a month after the song had been released in this country, and there were these figures coming in, not just from this country, but from, because all the servicemen and women in Great Britain were buying up the song because it made them feel less homesick. And then it went to all the battlefronts, and of course the most famous was the Pacific.
Yes, yes. And your father, in fact, actually went out there on one of his tours.
Oh, he did three tours, a tour of the British Isles, a tour of the Italian front, and then a tour of the Pacific with the show.
Well, I know he did come to Britain. We won't ask you to play My British Buddy, which is the song he wrote to cement the special relationship between our two
peoples.
You know,
I can't sing, but I...
What's that?
I think that's how My British Buddy goes.
My British Buddy, he's as different as can be. It's like I like my coffee and he likes his tea.
But there's also a wonderful line which I'm going to dreadfully misquote, which has to do with I think I'm winning the war and so does he, or something like that.
I know lyric writers are entitled to take a little poetic license. So, with a bit of help from Mary Ellen, what is the problem with this verse?
All right, I'll
do it, and you can nestle underneath tastefully.
Okay.
The sun is shining, the grass is green, the orange and palm trees sway. There's never been such a day in Beverly Hills, L.A. Now, spot the deliberate mistake.
My mother pointed out to my father when she heard the verse that you cannot say Beverly Hills, L.A. L.A. is a city, and so is Beverly Hills. It would be Beverly Hills, C.A.
For California.
And my father said, he thought about it a little, he said, no, he said, that's the way I want it. Well, and that was his response. My mother very rarely corrected my father, but if she did, the general response was, that's the way I want it.
Well, I think I'm with your father on that one. We'll be having zip codes in the song. But the next two lines are the ones I really like. And I think this is a first for most people, because this is this famous song played on Irving Berlin's very own piano. I love these two lines. But it's December the 24th. And I'm longing to be up north. Irving Berlin's daughter, Mary Ellen Barrett, playing his piano and with a little help tapping out those sleigh bells in the snow.
Please tell your listeners I am so rusty.
Don't say that, because unlike your father, you can play the white keys. I never thought I'd see anyone playing an Irving Berlin piano and playing the white keys. That's a first occurrence. May all your Christmases be white, Mary Ellen Barrett.
Yours too. Merry Christmas.
And let's hear that lovely verse one more time. December the 24th, and I'm longing to be up north. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know. Where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all Christmases be white. It's over 7 decades since Irving Berlin bashed out White Christmas on his key-shifting Buick. The world it was born into is long gone. All those homesick GIs out in the Pacific, sitting in the sand and watching Bing on USO Christmas tours. But the original recording remains the biggest selling record in the world. And the song itself is embedded at the heart of the Christmas season, Not a song about snow, but a song about home. My friend Monique Froteau is here. Grab a line, Monique.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Just hear those sleigh bells in the snow.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card
days be merry and bright,
and may all your Christmases be.
A song from me to you this Christmas. Words and music by Irving Berlin. Thank you, Monique Froteau. Thank you, Mary Ellen Barrett, Irving Berlin's daughter. And from all of us at Stein Online, to you and yours, have a wonderful Christmas, and may your days be merry and bright.
Mark Stein's Song of the Week is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.